Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvah Sadi Ches. We're on Sadi Zayin Amud Beis. We are almost up to the Mishnah. The Gemara's continued discussion emanating from yesterday's Mishnah. Go back to the Mishnah yesterday. So an Aman is able to collect her Ksuvah, and the only question that the Mishnah addresses is that she can collect her Shelo Beis Din. Basically deregulation. That a woman, the widow's ability to collect suva is not going to have to go procedurally through Beis Din, but she could do it without Beis Din. And why would that be? So, well, she's collecting for two reasons. She's collecting either for Mizonis or she's collecting suva. Now, for Mizonis, you understand why deregulation. Mizonis is her support. That's her food. And so, obviously, if it's a question of her getting her meal, so you want to be able to get right away. What about suva? Is there any good reason why you want to deregulate for suva as well? Meaning, as we pointed out yesterday, it'd be better for her to go to Beis Din and collect through Beis Din. Beis Din's going to create a lot more safeguards and safe checks and make sure that the sale was a valid sale, et cetera, et cetera. So why not go through Beis Din? So as we pointed out yesterday, that's Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint. So Shita's Rabbi Shimon is that when a woman sells for her ksuva, she should only be selling through Beis Din. On the other hand, according to the Tanakama says that when a woman collects either her ksuva or mizonos, it deregulated. It doesn't have to be through Beis Din. So it demands an explanation, meaning according to the Tanakama, why is it that a woman should be able to sell her, to sell off the properties of the estate, and even though she's only collecting for ksuva, and meanwhile, why is she allowed to do that? Now, how do we know that that's the Tanakama's viewpoint? Because we saw it yesterday in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, according to the Tanakama, according to the Chachamim, so what a woman can do is even sell Mina Erisin. Right, she's a widow from Erisin, Rachmanus, and now she could sell for her ksuva. I know it's their ksuva because there are no mizonos after Erisin. The only thing that exists between Erisin and Suin when she becomes a widow is only the collection of her ksuva. And yet, even there, the Chachamim say that she can collect a filu shelo beis din. She could sell off properties even without beis din. So why should that be? So that was the Gemara's discussion that we had yesterday. And to that, the Gemara gave two explanations. So one belonging to Ula and the other belonging to another Amora. Ula's position was chayin. The issue, the consideration is it's chayin. In other words, what we want to do, this is Rashi's explanation, as I mentioned yesterday, and we'll continue giving Rashi's explanation. And what we want to do is that we want to make marriage favorable to women. We want to make marriage attractive to women. And if women have a hard time collecting their ksuva once they're a widow, so that'll create a certain amount of outrage amongst the female population. They're not going to want to get married. So therefore, in order to make it a little bit easier for them, in order for marriage to be a little bit more attractive to them, so we give them assurances that collecting their money after they become a widow is not going to be this long process. Good. That's one pshat. And then the other pshat, which is offered by Rabbi Yochanan, is that we don't want a person, generally speaking, doesn't want his wife to have the degradation and the embarrassment of having to stand in front of Beis Din. Good. That's the two reasons that are offered for the Tanakama, why it is that even when she's just selling for ksuva, she's still going to be able to sell property shelo beis din. Those are the two positions. The Gemara pointed out yesterday there's a nafka mina between these two positions. But anyway, so that's where we stand right now. So that's a lot of setup just to get to finish off yesterday's sugya. But that's basically the idea. A woman selling off properties of the Yisomim for the collection of her mizonos and her ksuva. And again, just to now outline it, according to the Tanakama, that ability to sell is going to be for purposes of collection of mizonos and for the collection of the purpose of ksuva. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Shimon, she can only sell off properties without Beis Din for the purposes of mizonos, but not for the purposes of ksuva. If she wants to collect for ksuva, she has to go through Beis Din. Good. So those are the two positions that we saw yesterday. And now, just to finish up from yesterday, to wrap up from yesterday. So what we did yesterday is we pointed to the upcoming Mishnah. We're going to see this Mishnah momentarily. So the Mishnah teaches us that a grusha lo simkar lo beis din, that if you're a divorcee, the only way you can collect is in front of Beis Din. And we pointed out yesterday that Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon, Shitas Rabbi Shimon. Okay, it's true there's another way to say the Mishnah, but let's right now, I'm presenting it as the Gemara is presenting it right now. That position is going like Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara says, okay, but I knew Rabbi Shimon's position already. The Gemara is arguing, yeah, I know I knew Rabbi Shimon's position already, but I needed the Mishnah to hammer it home. And go back to Gemara's yesterday. Why do I need a hammer? Why do I need the mission to reinforce Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint? Again, we did that yesterday as well. So, continuing right where we left off yesterday. So, we are about 10, 12 lines from the top of the Amud. So, Hanami Tanina. So, the Gemara now points out we have another Mishnah as well, and that's called Sheila Mizonos. So, any woman who doesn't have Mizonos can only collect in front of Beis Din. Another statement of the Mishnah, again reiterating the same point, that according to Rabbi Shimon, the only time that a woman can sell off properties is for her Mizonos, not for a Ksuva. So the Gemara says, Lasui, my lav, Lasui, Grusha. Isn't that coming to include a Grusha? And again, we have a superfluous statement, something we knew already. According to Rabbi Shimon, a woman can only sell off properties for Mizonos, not for Ksuva. The Gemara says, no. Lo, Lasui, Migureshes, Vena Migureshes. The Gemara says, no. What the Mishnah is coming to teach me is a much subtler point. And that is that a woman is maybe divorced. Now, I know this sounds funny, and we're going to see this a number of times, especially here in Seder Nashim. What does that mean, she's maybe divorced? Well, before I get to the halacha of Rabbi Zera, how could a woman possibly be divorced? So the classic example, Rashi here brings it down, is that he threw the get. Okay. That's not the best way to deliver the get. The best way to deliver the get is to put her in a hand, which is as per the instructions of the Torah. Okay, but he threw the get, and the get landed somewhere between him and her, and Safek Karav Lo, Safek Karav Lo. Okay, this is just a classic example where it's now, she may be divorced. If it was proximate to him, not divorced. If it was proximate to her, yes, she was divorced. And we don't know where it landed. Okay, over here, the Gemara is just simply creating a construct just to make a point. And that is that under those circumstances, now, can she get married again? The answer for it right now, of course, is no. She is possibly a married woman. Okay, so is she divorced? Maybe. It's a funny maybe, but maybe. Okay, but right now, can she get married again? Absolutely not. So, and what's impeding her from getting married? So her possible husband. That's a funny language, but her possible husband is impeding her from getting married. Okay, so now, who's going to support her? So that's what Rabbi Zera is teaching us. Rabbi Zera is teaching us is that her husband now has to support her. So under those circumstances, that's what the Mishnah is coming to explain. That under those circumstances, the only way she'd be able to collect the only way she'd be able to collect Mizonos is only via Beis Din. Tashma, one more round of this discussion. Kishem Shemachar Shalom Beis Din, Kach Yosha Yoshik Suvasa, Mochim Shalom Beis Din. Okay, so she can sell off properties and she has now, and deregulation, she doesn't have to do it through Beis Din, and those who are coming in her stead, meaning her Yorshim, who now are looking, they're also, they inherited the debt. So they're looking to sell properties in order to satisfy the debt that their mother had. So they inherited the debt. So they could sell properties. So Afilu Shalom Be'Beis Din. Now, Bishlam Laman Dam Lefishe Nadam Rosh Shitzbaz Be'ishto Be'Beis Din. Ki'echid I lo nichala. Tizizbazi Yosha Nami lo nichala. Lo nichala delivze. So the Gemara says, now, if you're working with the Rav Yochanan understanding that a woman, that a husband does not want his wife to be degraded to go to Beis Din, so neither his wife, I was going to say his late wife, it's not his late wife, he's the one who passed away. So, but in other words, not him, even after he died, he wouldn't want his widow to do that, nor would he want the kids to do that as well. But Elaman Damer Mishum Chena Yosha Maichein Ika. So the Gemara says, but here's what I'm bothered by. Meaning, if the issue is chayin, which is Ula's explanation, so if the issue is chayin, so then I don't understand. Chayin is just simply so that women in general don't feel that, hey, I don't want to get married because look at all this regulation I have to go through in order to collect my ksuva. Okay, that's true by the widow, but if we're now talking about the widow's, the widow's inheritors, if they're next of kin, well, in other words, what we have to make marriage attractive to them. Right now, we're assuming the Yorshim are males. The Gemara says, Tirgama Ula, Kigon, Shiyushta Bito Chosa. So the Gemara says, okay, but you just made an assumption. It's not necessarily true. Women can inherit. If all she was survived by was a daughter, daughter's going to inherit her. And so therefore, once again, now we have a woman collecting her ksuva. So we want to make it as painless as possible. And under those circumstances, of course, we're going to deregulate. Okay, so where do we stand right now? So that was a complicated bit of Gemara, but what comes out from all that is, once again, we have a machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon. Let's just quickly reset this machlokas. So now, the widow is coming and she's collecting for her mizonos. She's collecting for her ksuva, right? And sometimes she could be collecting for both. And if there are arrears in Mizona, she'll be collecting for both. But she'll be collecting. Now, how is she collecting? So she's going off to the estate. She's selling off properties. Fine. Which she absolutely has every right to do. In other words, both of them are contractual obligations. So, of course, now she's going to go and sell off for both of these obligations. Does she have to do so in front of Beis Din? Tanakhama says no and no. No for Mizonos, no for Ksuva. And Rabbi Shimon says, depends. If it's for her Mizonos, no. And again, for obvious reasons. She needs to eat. We don't want to regulate right now. We want her to be able to eat today. So for Mizonos, no. She doesn't need Beis Din. But for Ksuva, yes. Okay. And then what we did over the course of yesterday's daf, and we just wrapped it up, is just a better understanding of the Tanakhama. Meaning, Rabbi Shimon really seems to be more correct. Meaning that if she's selling off properties of the estate, the properties of the estate belong to children. And I understand they don't have to be children. They could be adults as well. But right now, if she's the one selling it off, they're probably children. And you're selling off properties of children. Granted, it's for debt satisfaction. But they're children's estate. So it makes sense to do it via Beis Din. Beis Din's going to make sure that things are done correctly. So Rabbi Shimon really does seem to be more correct. But as the Gemara pointed out, we have explanations behind the Tanakhama. One was Ula's explanation. The other was Rav Yochanan's explanation. Good. There are ways to explain the Tanakhama. But right now, basic machlokas to walk away with is can she sell off properties without Beis Din? For Mizonos, yes, unequivocally. Can she sell off properties for her Ksuva collection? Machlokas. Between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon. Good. Now we're starting the Mishnah on one side, Zayin Amud Beis, and we're starting the Mishnah towards the bottom of the Amud. And now we move on to the next Machlokas. And over here, what's going to happen? It's basically keep everything I just said. So keep that in mind. And we're going to add one more point. We already noted that once a woman collects her Ksuva, she no longer is entitled to Mizonos. We already pointed that out. Here we're going to be asking and arguing over a really simple question. Does that mean that she collected all of her ksuva? Or does it even mean that as long as a dent is made in the ksuva, she no longer is entitled to mizonos? This is a machlokas, as we're about to see together. Machra ksuva sa o mixasa. She sells her ksuva or part of it. Mashkana ksuva sa o mixasa. She mortgages either all her ksuva or part of it. Mortgages meaning... she uses a ksuva as a mashkan, right? She needs money. She's right now desperate for money, like today. And so what she does is that she deposits the ksuva by somebody else as a safe key, as security for a ksuva. Anasa ksuva sala acher o miksasa. She gives the ksuva to somebody else or part of it. Now, giving the ksuva, probably over here, not referencing the actual document itself, but the land representing the ksuva, and she gave part of it or some of it or part of it away. Lo simkor sashar ela bebeis din. So she can only collect the rest of it in Beis Din. V'chachamim mocheres hi, afilo arba v'chamish apamim, u'mocheres l'mazono shelo be'Beis Din. Now, according to the Chachamim, she could sell four or five times, and she could sell for the purpose of mazono shelo be'Beis Din. V'kosevis, and when selling for mazonos, she should write that down on the contract, on the sale. And that is l'mazonos mecharti, I sold it for mazonos. What we have in this Mishnah really is a twofold machlokas. Meaning it's a little bit tricky to read it in the Mishnah, but in other words, aside from the machlokas that we have to remember from yesterday's daf, we also have to acknowledge the fact that there's an additional machlokas as well. Meaning, according to Rabbi Shimon, partial payment of ksuva, that's it, no more mizonos. Whereas according to the Chachamim, no, even if she received a partial payment of ksuva, she's still entitled to mizonos. So ugrusha lo simkor ela be'Beis Din, and then the Mishnah ends off by telling us that if it's not a widow but rather a divorcee, and she wants to collect, she can only collect through Beis Din. And again, either that's Rabbi Shimon, as we pointed out yesterday. Alternatively, there's a way to learn it like the Chachamim as well, but the easier way to say it is that it's Rabbi Shimon. Now, Masisa Mani, Rabbi Shimon, Eidetanya, Machru Ksuvasa, Mashkana Ksuvasa, Asa Ksuvasa, Potiki, La'acher, Ein La, Mizonos. Good. So, our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon. We learned in a Braisa. She sells the ksuva, she collateralizes the ksuva, she makes the ksuva a potiki. The ksuva is a potiki. Potiki just simply basically is a security, but with a clear indication of where the collection is coming from. Meaning it's not a general lien, but it's a very specific lien on an item. So in any one of those circumstances, ain la mizonos. So she no longer is entitled to mizonos. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afepi shlo machra v'lo mashkana k'suvasa ela mechitza ela machatzisa avda mizonoseha. And according to Rabbi Shimon, even if she sold part of her k'suva, she forfeits mizonos from that point going forward. Good. So what we have over here in the Braisa was much clearer than our Mishnah. What we have in the Braisa over here is a clear formulation of the position of Rabbi Shimon. A partial sale of her k'suva, a partial collection of her k'suva, is in fact going to forfeit her mizonos from that point going forward. Okay, now, here's what the Gemara is going to do. So this machlokas, it's good. It's relatively easy to understand. The Gemara is now going to make a really strange comparison. And I'm going to obviously try my best to explain the Gemara, but the comparison is going to be a bit of a jump. So what does that mean? That according to Rabbi Shimon, so he says, mixes kesef kekol kesef. Obviously what Rabbi Shimon is of the position is that even though there's still partial ksuva due to her, so that's not considered kol kesef. Right? Lo aminan mixes kesef kekol kesef, and Rabbanan Savar aminan mixes kesef kekol kesef. And the Chachamim hold that partial money is considered like full money. Okay, let me restate this. Meaning, according to the Chachamim, as long as she owed some of her ksuva, that's viewed as if the ksuva is owed to her. And therefore, she's still entitled to mizonos. Where Rabbi Shimon says, no. If she's owed some of her ksuva, that's not viewed like all of her ksuva is owed to her. And therefore, no longer entitled to mizonos. That seems to be the position. And meanwhile, we have the opposite positions taken in a totally different area in halacha. Okay, now this is going to be a significant jump. It's going to be such a big jump that it's going to be hard. I'm speaking personally over here. It's going to be hard to understand how the Gemara went from collection of ksuva to now our discussion about who a Kohen Gadol may or may not marry. Now, hopefully this is going to sound familiar because we heard this already. We learned this already. But the Gemara now reviews for us. So we know that the Kohen Gadol has a mitzvah to marry a woman. We also know that the mitzvah of the Kohen Gadol to marry a woman is specifically a besula. Okay, so that means to say that she has to have her physical besulim. Now, so according to Shitas Rabbi Meir, so even though she was never with a man, and all she did was mature, physically mature, to now where she's a bogeris, under those circumstances, the Kohen Gadol can no longer marry her. The Gemara assumes, we went over this again earlier, and that is the assumption of the Gemara. We saw this back in Yevamos, is that there is the besulim, so it effaces over the course of her maturation. It's still there. In other words, even as she turns 12 and a half years of age, right? Still, there is besulim, there's physical besulim over there, but it effaces a little bit. And so therefore, it's not as large as it once was when she was 11 or 12 years of age. And now, is she a besula? Yes. But in other words, in a diminished version. So according to Reb Meir, that's enough. That diminishment is enough to disqualify her to a Kohen Gadol. And Reb Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Machshirin, Bebogeres. And both Reb Elazar and Rabbi Shimon say that a Kohen Gadol is allowed to marry a Bogeres because even though she only has a partial Besulim, that qualifies her as being a Besula. Okay, so.
What do? They do the Kiddushin and let her stay with him until the time for Chuppah?
No, no, it's going to happen. It happens. In other words, this diminishment of the besulim is going to be happening by every woman. According to Rabbi Meir, that means that a Kohen Gadol, by definition, can only marry a girl under 12 and a half years of age.
Right.
So right.
That's what I mean. But he doesn't actually have to go to Chuppah. Can he do Kedushin?
Maybe.
That's what I'm asking.
Oh, yeah, possibly. Okay. In other words, right. Do both stages have to occur before?
Correct.
Okay. Fair question, and I don't know the answer. Okay, good. Yeah. So again, as far as the Gemara's point is concerned, right, I'm not prepared to answer any of these questions. I don't know. But as far as the Gemara's point is concerned, the Gemara is interested in the comparison. Meaning what we just learned together is that according to Rabbi Shimon, even though it is a remnant of her Besulin, it's still viewed as if the Besulin is there. And that is the exact opposite of what Rabbi Shimon said regarding the remnant of the Ksuva. If there's a remnant of the ksuva, it's as viewed as if the ksuva is no longer there, right? Everyone see the comparison? Now, on one hand, if you're a total literalist, yes, the comparison is right there in front of us. It's actually pretty clear. But how we're moving in areas in halacha from a mamonous issue, a monetary issue regarding whether or not she's entitled to mizonos, not entitled to mizonos, and moving to a iser veheter issue regarding the physical nature of a woman and the diminishment of her besulim, that's a big jump. Okay, but fine. The Gemara makes the jump. So the Gemara says, no, hasam b'kray pligi. Gemara says, there is no inconsistency. Let me explain to you how we got here. So the Gemara says, look, Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Besula afilam mixas besulim, besula ad de'ikam, kula besulim. So if you look carefully, read the psukim carefully. It's all in the beginning of Parashas Emor. So it says, besula. No, let me do it better. Had it said besula, so then afilam mixas besulim. So then it would be even partial besulim would be acceptable. Now, besuleha, which is what the pasuk actually says, which is extra, so adika kula besulim. So that tells me now that we have to go run counter to the word besula, which means even, not even. She needs her entire besulim, meaning that she needs the uneffaced besulim, which only occurs when she's 12 years of age. And bivsula, that extra base in the front, tells me a different halacha, and that is that only when she had relations with another man in the normal, in the natural fashion, then she's ineligible for a kohen. But if she had bia shalokadarka, she's still eligible for a kohen. And Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Savri, Besula, Shlema, Mashma, and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon will tell you the following. Had the Torah said the word Besula by itself, Shlema. Because that's the, and I, now you see it. Now it becomes clear. That's the Rabbi Shimon default position. That had it said Besula, it needs to be the entire Besula. And by virtue of the fact that the Torah says Besuleha, I feel a mix of Besulim, even partial Besulim would be sufficient. And Bivsula, she would call Besulim Kayamim, Bein Bekadarka, Bein Shalok Bekadarka. And in terms of once she has relations with a man, she's ineligible to the Kohen. That's where she had Bia Kedarka, and even Shalok Kedarka would render her ineligible for a Kohen Gadol. Okay, anyway, I'd kind of takes us to the end of the comparison between Mixas Ksuva and Mixas Besulim, and admittedly, that was a leap. We're on Sadi Chesam and Aleph, and taking it right from the top, second line down, Hai Isasa, De Tafsa Kasa, Kasa De Kaspa, Biksuva Sa. What a tongue twister. So anyway, basically what she did is, look, she was entitled to her Ksuva, and she took a silver cup as the beginning of the payment of her Ksuva. So Katava Mizone. So what are we looking at over here? It's very simple. We're looking at a halachic shayla. She now has received partial payment of Iksuva. She now wants to know, has that now ended her Mizonos entitlement? The answer is very simple. Depends who you follow like. Do we follow like the Chachamim, or do we follow like Rabbi Shimon? If we follow like the Chachamim, she has not forfeited her Mizonos distribution. According to Rabbi Shimon, she has. So the question really is reduced to, who do we follow? The Chachamim or Rabbi Shimon? So Asa coming to Rav Amar Lahu Liyas Mezilu Havelu Mizonos Leis Techashla to Rabbi Shimon. Damar Lo Amina Mixes Kesef Kekol Kesef. So they went to Rava, and Rava's psak was very clear. We follow the Chachamim. We don't follow Rabbi Shimon. She's still entitled to receive her Mizonos. Okay. Shach Le Rava Berei De Rava Le Rav Yosef Mocher Shlo Bebeisin Tzricha Shvua Ein Tzricha Shvua. Okay. New topic for today. Okay. New topic for today. Okay, in order to approach this new topic, it's a short piece of Gemara over here, but there are a couple of basic things that we need to know. Number one, anytime you're collecting from Yesomim, so again, it's serious business. We made this point already once earlier this morning. Let's make it again. It's serious business every time you're collecting from Yesomim, and when you collect from Yesomim, so you are taking money away from children. Now, rightfully so, you're collecting your debt, but still, I'll say it again. You're taking money away from children. So what do you have to do? So number one, you have to make a shvua. This is a Gemara in Gittin. Gemara in Gittin, Daf Lamedalad, Lamedalad Beis, teaches us Rashi, whoever threw in the parentheses. You have to make a shvua when collecting. The shvua is actually very simple. The shvua says you are going to swear that you never collected the debt. You're owed the debt, right? That you could say definitively. And again, it's just a safeguard measure because you're taking money away from children, so you're going to be making a shvua. That's number one. So and number two is you have to know Gemara in Erchin. The Gemara in Erchin, here it's Daf Chaf Aleph, the Gemara in Erchin teaches us that whenever you're taking money away from an estate, so again, rightfully so, we're talking about debt collection. So when you are taking money away from the estate, so what are you entitled to take? Property. But you're not taking the property. So what you're going to be doing is you're going to be selling off the property. What do you have to do? You have to auction the property for a minimum of 1 month. The Gemara in Erechin goes through the details in terms of how the auction is done. But right now, and there are many more details in what I'm about to present. But in other words, at least for a month, it has to be on the auction. For a simple reason and a good reason. And that is that we want to make sure that they're going to get a good price for the property, as we're going to be satisfying debtors. We're going to be satisfying creditors, and we want to make sure that the kids are not going to get ripped off. So therefore, put it on the auction for at least a month. Gemara now has the following question. Shalach le Rabba Bri, the Rabba le Rav Yosef, Mocheresh, lo beveisin, so tzricha shvo, ain't tzricha shvo. So, when a woman is collecting and she's doing so without Beis Din, remember, we discussed all of yesterday and some of today that there are occasions where a woman can collect and not needing Beis Din. Is she going to have to make a shvua or is she not going to make a shvua? Now, as Rashi points out over here, Tosus says it even clearer. And that is, every time you collect from Yisomi, you have to make a shvua. That's the Gemara in Gittin. What the Gemara is asking over here is, in addition to that, you're also going to have to make a second shvua as well. The second shvua is going to be that you haven't gotten paid more than the ksuva. Meaning, aside from the fact that you haven't collected debt yet, she's also going to have to make a shvua, at least we're asking now. She's going to have to make a second shvua, which is that, are you sure you haven't collected more than the ksuva entitles you to collect? Fine. So that's the question the Gemara is asking. And v'tibayi le'hachraza. So the Gemara says, and I don't understand. Before getting on to the second shvua, why don't we ask another question? And that is, does the properties have to get auctioned off? So Amar lei hachraza lo kamibayi le. So he says, look, I'm not, as far as the requirement to auction off in this particular case, I don't even think that gets off the ground, that question. Why? Damar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav Nachman, Amana, Shisham la atzma, lo asav lo klum. So, we have to understand a statement that was made by Rav Nachman. The statement of Rav Nachman is that if I have a widow who is estimating for herself, lo asav lo klum, she's done nothing. Okay. Now, what does that mean? So, hechidami, that's exactly the Gemara's question. Ida achruz amai lo asav lo klum. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If there was an auction that was done, so why not allow her to keep the property? Meaning, what are you worried about? She didn't get the right amount. In other words, they put it on the auction for 30 days. They got the best price. Why can't she just keep the property? Alav de lo achruz, it must be that no auction was done. Ula atzma hu de lo asav lo klum. And if no auction was done, she can't keep the property. Hala acher masha asa asa. But if she sells off the properties to others, so then the sale is going to be a valid sale. So what we're trying to do is deduce from Rav Nachman that no auction is necessary. Why? Because Rav Nachman said that if she keeps it for herself, it's no good. And so we're trying to wrap our heads around that. What does that mean? It must mean that there was no auction that was done. The Gemara says, scratch that. Lo'olam da'achras. No. There has to be an achrasa that's done. In other words, you want to make sure you're getting the best price. And so an auction was done. So let's reset the question. An auction was done. We have what we believe to be the best price for the property. So now, can she keep the property? No. But why? Why not? So the Gemara explains. The Amila man sham lech. Because what we say to her is, ma sham lech. Who auctioned it off for you? Now that's a tough line of Gemara to understand, but presumably what the Gemara means is the following. And Rashi doesn't say it super clear, but presumably, I mean, Rashi does say it, but presumably what the Gemara means is like this. When she's selling off the estate's property, so she's an agent, okay? Now obviously she's operating and doing this on behalf of herself. But in other words, but her mission, her objective is to sell property. So right now she's representing who as the agent? She's representing the estate. I understand benefiting herself, but in other words, in the sale, she's representing the estate. Here's basically what the Gemara is saying. You can't represent both parties. Meaning, as an agent, you can't represent the seller and the buyer. So in other words, an auction was done, and we have the best price. So why then, after the auction is done, why can't she keep the property? Because she can't be an agent to the estate and an agent for herself as well. You can't be an agent for the seller and the buyer. Right? Alan, can you? Can you do that here?
It's allowed. There are documents you have to sign. It's called the transit. You have to transition from a independence of representation to a transaction broker.
Okay, for those listening at home right now, so I just I'm curious.
Not be allowed.
Right. Okay, good. Right, this sensitivity that the pshat that we're saying.
I don't like it. There's no way you can have proper representation.
Yeah, good. So the pshat that I just offered in the Gemara is so good. So as I'm speaking now to somebody who knows real estate more than just a little bit, so good. So this same sensitivity occurs now in law as well, and so fine. So in other words, so hachraza needs to be done, and the only reason why she can't retain it for herself is because then she's serving as a dual agent for both seller and buyer, and that's what the Gemara is an opponent to. So there was an occasion once. A person left over. So kisa diasme, whatever. Mispo lebehemos. Okay, whatever. It's some item. Let's just leave it at that. Anyway, how does he describe it? Okay, fine. So the and Azur Shamla Nafsha Barba Meazuze and okay, good. Whatever it is, exactly. Whatever it is. And it was held by him, meaning he was right now the custodian of it, and he also happened to have been a creditor as well. And finally his patience ran out and he wanted to get paid. Okay, and what they did is Azur Shamla Nafsha Barba Meazuze. And so he appraised it and went for 400 zuz. Okay, whatever this item is, that's a good amount of money. And Iyakar Kambishis Meya. So now what happened was is that after appraisal was done, it went up to 600. So that's a significant rise in price. Also coming to Rabbi Ame, Amrle Mashamlach. And they go to Rabbi Ame, and Rabbi Ame said, here's what you can't do. Meaning you're appraising to sell it. Meaning, again, same issue. You're right now representing the estate in the sale of the item. So you can't double dip. You can't be the agent of the estate, and you can't serve as your own agent as well. So in other words, if you appraised it to sell it, so now you're representing the estate, you will have to sell it to somebody. By you retaining it does not make it yours, and therefore that appreciation, it went from 400 to 600, so that appreciation all goes towards the estate. Okay, good. Rabbi Ami came out with a very clear ruling, and the Gemara itself is going to come out with a really clear ruling. And that is Vehilchasa, Tzricha Shvua, So, number one, when a woman is selling off properties of the estate in order to satisfy her ksuva, and again, whether or not she has to go to Beis Din, she doesn't have to go to Beis Din, that is a Rabbi Shimon Tanakama debate that we saw both yesterday and today. Is a separate shvua necessary? The Gemara says yes. Yes. The conclusion is that, and the way we're saying it is that aside from the general shvua that you have to make when collecting from the yesomim, the woman has to make a secondary shvua as well. Good. That, yes. And as far as achraza is concerned, ain't a tzricha achraza. Even though we just argue that achraza is necessary, the Gemara says a halacha lamaisa, practical halacha, is that that achraza is not necessary for this particular type of sale. Okay, we find ourselves in Sadeh Chesem Aleph. We are starting the Mishnah. Amana, Shaisa Ksuva Samasayim. Okay, so here we go now with a discussion, a really interesting discussion in the Gemara regarding the appraisal of properties and what happens when properties are misappraised. And who gets to benefit from that? So, her Ksuva was worth Haisa Ksuva Samana. I skipped. Okay, so let's start off with the following case. Her ksuva was 200. Okay, in other words, that's how much the settlement amount was in her ksuva. And she sold a property that was worth 100, and she sold it for 200. Okay, let's call her right now the best salesperson, right, of her generation. Good. So the alternatively, shavim asayim b'mana. The property was actually worth $200 and she only sold it for $100. Then that would make her the worst salesperson in history. Either way, Niskaba Ksuva saw, her Ksuva is satisfied. Okay, let's take this step by step. The first case, second case. In the first case, I think we can all understand. First of all, let's. I don't want to table the discussion, but I'll just raise it and I'll answer it very simply. In other words, you're not allowed to defraud people. Anytime you sell anything over a sixth of its value or under six of its value, so immediately the sale is voided because you violated fraud. Fraud of the Torah. So over here, the property was worth 100. You sold it for 200. Didn't you defraud people? So the answer is no. Right? The Gemara does not discuss this. The Mishnah doesn't discuss it. Tosfos over here, the very bottom, Tosfos over here quotes the Yerushalmi. And basically, when it comes to property, when it comes to real estate, there is no fraud by real estate. Okay? That's the Yerushalmi's answer. Meaning, when I say fraud, I mean in terms of price fluctuation. If the property was valued at 100 and you sold it for 200, somebody's ready to pay 200 for it, so the sale's valid. When selling metaltalin, that is not a valid sale. You're selling it 100% marked up over its market value, so that's ona. And then what happens is that it voids the sale. But that's not so by property. Okay, so let's put that aside. Now, let's go step by step. In case number one in the Mishnah, it's a little bit easier for me to explain. Because what just happened over here? She has debt of 200. Okay, she made an amazing sale. The land of the estate was only worth 100, but somebody was ready to pay 200. Was her debt satisfied? Yes. Okay. And even though, who gained from that sale? Obviously the estate did. Because the estate only lost 100 of a 200 debt, and the 200 debt now is off the books. Okay, but still, her debt is satisfied. That's easy to explain. The second case is going to be a little bit more of a challenge. In the second case in the Mishnah, the property was valued at 200. She did a terrible job selling. It was a 200 zuz property, and she only collected 100. So there, even though she had a 200 zuz ksuva, and only half her debt was paid off, but still, we're going to view it as if her debt was being collected. Because she did sell a property that was appraised at 200, even though she only sold it for 100. Okay. A little bit more difficult to explain, but the truth of the matter is that I understand this as well. In other words, obviously, what she should have done is that she should have sold it for 200. It was appraised at 200. So in other words, now we're looking at it from the estate's perspective. That was a 200 zuz property. We had it appraised, right? All properties are appraised at the time of sale. So we had it appraised. It was a 200 zuz property. The fact that you only collected 100, that's a you problem. That's not an us problem. As far as we're concerned, the debt's been satisfied. Okay, so fine. So those are the two statements of the Mishnah. Now, and that was the easy part of the Mishnah. Now it gets a little bit more challenging. Let's say that the ksuva was a mana. She sold the property that was appraised for 101. Okay, not exactly what the Mishnah says, but I'm just saying this to make the example easy to illustrate. In other words, the property was 101 zuz property, and so she says to the estate, no problem, I'm going to sell it at full value of 101. And I'll just give you the difference in money. All right? And we're good, right? The Mishnah says, no, we're not good. In other words, the only property that she could sell is property that is up to the debt, but not any property that exceeds in value greater than the debt. Even if she's ready to return the difference. You can't do that. So in other words, the properties that she can sell by definition have to be capped at the value of the debt. On this particular issue, so Rav Shimon Gamliel is a little bit more lenient. In other words, if the difference between the property and the debt is not significant, so then you could do this. So in other words, for the 100-101, the debt is 100. The property is appraised at 101. She sells it for 101. And she wants to return that difference. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that's fine. only when the difference becomes significant. Now, what is the significance? He gives the shear. I'm not even going to try to explain what the shear. In other words, if the overage of the property is significant over than that of the debt, then and only then can she not sell off the property. But if the difference is small, so then she can sell the property, and obviously, whatever the balance is, she'll return back to the estate. One more illustration of this principle in the Mishnah, and that's the following. She got a 400 zuz ksuva. First of all, God bless her. She did well. And now, with that 400 zuz ksuva, now she is either a widow or she's a divorcee, and now she's selling off property. So again, we're going to assume like the Tanakama. You can't sell a property exceeding debt. But over here, she made four different sales. The first property she sold at 100, second 100, third 100. So far, so good. She collected now 300 or 400, 300 out of the 400 debt. Now she sells off the last property, but on this last sale, she sold the property that exceeded the total debt. In other words, this last property was sold for 101. So now what? Are we going to negate all the sales of all the properties? The answer, of course, is no. In other words, properties 1, 2, and 3 were all sold bekashrus. They were all sold because they were all under the debt. But then when she sold that last property exceeded the debt. So only the last property is going to be voided. The first three properties she sold are going to be good. Okay, that happens to have been an easy case to understand. The Gemara says, look, once I know the first two cases of the Mishnah, let's compare and contrast. In case number two of the Mishnah, she sold the property that was appraised at 200, she sold it for 100. So what do we say to her? That's your loss. Meaning you're the one who was delinquent. Not delinquent, sorry. Negligent. You were the one who were negligent in the sale. You know the property appraised for 200. You elected to sell for 100. So in other words, as far as we're concerned, debt's been satisfied. So in other words, you're going to suffer the loss. So all the Gemara is asking right now is, well, generally speaking, if you're the one suffering the loss, don't you also get the profit as well? Generally speaking, that's how it works. So in other words, so now on the flip case, which the Mishnah actually gives us, the land was 100 and she found somebody who was going to buy for 200. So now I ask you, if she's going to have to suffer the loss, can't she also gain from the profit? Can't she turn around to the estate and say, you owe me? Meaning, I know I commanded a 200 zuz purchase price for something that was only valued at 100. I know that. But can't we say that the land was only valued at 100? That extra 100 should go to me, and you still owe me 100. Makes sense. So the Gemara says, no. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm a Rava Baravua. So Kanchan a Rebbe, Hakol Abal Ma'os. So the Gemara says, Rebbe has a big principle. And that is that when you are providing the capital, it's the provider of the capital who's going to be receiving all gains. Okay? Kanchan a Rebbe. Rebbe taught from here, meaning our Mishnah serves as a basis for Rebbe, Hakol Abal Ma'os. So if you're the one providing capital, you're the one who's going to be profiting. The estate over here is obviously providing the capital. In other words, it's their land that's being sold. She did a fantastic job selling it. She sold the 100 zuz property for 200 zuz. Okay, thank you. But in other words, that was our property. We are the ones who are going to be profiting from it. All increase, all profits are going to go to the capitalists. Here I say that word literally. Kidetanya, we have a brice osifalo, achasisera kol, lishlech de Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yose, Amar Cholkin. Okay. Now the Gemara says, now if I may, and obviously the interest over here is not to confuse us, but if I may, let me confuse you. And that is, I'm going to quote a brice, and that is the following. Let's say I give money to a shliach. I say, do me a favor, make me a purchase. Good. And he goes and he makes me a purchase, and he got yisera. He got extra. Now, I know we're using very generic terms right now, but the point is as follows. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, that extra goes to the shliach. that runs counter to what we just got done saying. I know that, and the Gemara is going to acknowledge that. And Rabbi Yossi, Amar Chokin, Rabbi Yossi says, well, that extra that he received is going to be divided between the sender and the shliach. Gemara says, what just happened over here? That runs, both of those positions runs against what Rabbi taught us. The Hatanya Rabbi Yossi, Amar Akola Bala Ma'os, and not only that, just to make this a little bit more complicated, we have another statement of Rabbi Yossi that says, where does the extra go to? Who profits? The Bala Ma'os, the one who provided the capital. He's the one that's going to be receiving all profits. So, what we'll do now is as follows. Let's, just to make all this a little bit simpler, ignore Rabbi Yehuda. And obviously, I hate saying that, but in other words, just for the purposes of our discussion right now, we're just going to assume like Rabbi Yossi, and we're going to work on the steerer within Rabbi Yossi. On one hand, Rabbi Yossi says that when you are providing capital and sending somebody to go ahead and purchase something, so what happens to the profits? One statement of Rabbi Yossi is profits are split. A second statement of Rabbi Yossi is all profits go to the mishaleach, the one who funded. So, but how do we resolve? The Gemara says, "I'm a Rabbi Barcham lo kasha, kam bedavish eish lo kitzva, kam bedavish ein lo kitzva." Okay, so the Gemara says like this. It really depends on whether we're talking about things that are set in price and things that are not set in price. Okay, things that are set in price. Okay, so, right, silly illustration, but I hand money to my friend. I say, could you go to the bagel store and get me a dozen bagels? Good. And now he goes there, and the bagel place is so excited, he gives them not 12, but he gives them 13 bagels. Amazing. Okay, now there, it's clear how much money I gave him for the 12. It's a set amount, and an extra bagel was given. So over there, so now, okay, fine. And that's why my example stunk. It's okay. So now the extra bagel is a gift. It's a gift. Now who becomes the recipient of the gift? It's a very simple question. What did he want? Oh, okay, good. So what did the guy? Good. Alan, it's unfair sometimes where you and I are just thinking, our thinking is well too aligned. But in other words, it depends on what the gifter wanted. Now, we can ask him, and that would be a simple resolution, but we didn't ask him. So now what? So that's Rabbi Yossi says Cholkin. So Rabbi Yossi says, because we don't know, so now he gifted it. I don't know who the recipient of the gift is. Maybe it's because you were there, or maybe because he knew that I sent him. We don't know, so chokin, so we're going to divide. That's if something sheesh la kitzva, but something ain la kitzva. It doesn't have a set price. And now, without a set price, extra was given, that's given to the mishaleach. That is Rami Bar Chama's resolution of the two statements of Rav Yossi. And the Gemara says, and Amar Papa Hilchasa. And Rav Papa says, and oh, by the way, that's accepted. Hilchasa davish eish lo kitzva. So, chokin. Davish eish lo kitzva akol labal maos. Mai kamash malan. Shinui deshanin and shinui yehu. So the Gemara says, good. And basically what we're saying is, we're not just giving an answer to resolve a Rabbi Yossi. This answer is actually accepted la halacha. That when you go out and you make a purchase, and again, with somebody else's money, somebody sent you with it, with their money, and you had a gain, so what do we do with that gain? So again, if it's a davish eish lo kitzva, like my bagel example, that 13th bagel is going to get split. I don't know how excited I'm going to be over an extra half a bagel. But in other words, it's going to get split. But if it's ein lo kitzva, if the price is not a set amount, and then extra was, and then a gain was received, so for that gain, it's going to go to the mishalech. Good. E baye lohu. So what should we do? Okay, good. So, you know what? Let's go on. We're good. We'll go another 5 more minutes. Ibai Lahu. Amalei Zavalei Litcha. Okay. Next topic, as part of our discussion, we're starting it today. We're going to finish it tomorrow. This is going to go into tomorrow's daf, but let's start it today. So, I give instructions to the following. I tell the agent, what I want you to do is sell off one of my properties. But I tell him, I want you to sell off a lesach. Okay. For our purposes right now, half an acre. It's not a good translation, but it's a working one. So I tell him to sell half an acre. Now, my agent, God bless him, so I told him to sell half an acre, and he sold an acre. Okay, now, question over here is as follows. Mosif al dvaravu, velitcha miyakane, odil mamavi al dvaravu, velitcha namilokane. So, there are two ways that we could look at this. In other words, on one hand, the agent obviously, he didn't listen to instructions. That part's clear. But in terms of what is transacted, so can we say that, look, he, at least for the first half of the acre, he did follow your directions. And therefore that sale is in fact going to be a valid sale. And then the second half, which obviously he didn't listen to you, that's going to be voided. Or can we say, look, I told you to sell a half, you sold the whole, maybe that should void the whole sale. Good. It's a great question. Could see both sides of the question. The Gemara discusses. The first discussion, which we'll do right now, is going to be a Gemara in Mi'ilah. Okay. Let's do a little bit of setup over here. Okay. You take anything that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, even if it's in your house. I dedicate an item to the Beis HaMikdash. It's Hekdesh. And then what do? I misappropriate it. So, meaning I make usage of it for myself. So that is what's called being Moel Behekdesh. That's Mi'ilah. Stealing, but it's given a fancier term because you're doing so from the Beis HaMikdash. And with a lot of ramifications, if you're Moel Behekdesh, so you have to make restitution. You also have to add on 25%. On top of that, you have to bring a carbon as well. Good. Anyway, we don't have to focus on that right now. So anyway, so there's what's called Me'ilah Behekdesh. Also, one other thing really interesting when it comes to Me'ilah, and that is that generally in Halacha, right, 9 out of 10 times. No, let's say even stronger. 99 out of 100 times. It's a made-up stat. But it's still, the point is really good. And that is that if I tell you to do an Avera, and you do it, so do I get the Avera? Of course not. Ein shliach l'dvar Avera. When I instruct you to do an Avera, and you decide to do it, so you're going to be having full liability of doing the Avera. I told you to do it. Yeah, who told you to listen to me? Right? The Gemara in Kedushin has a great expression, divrei rav, divrei talmid, divrei mishomim. The Rebbe tells you to do something. The Talmud tells you to do something. You listen to the Rebbe. You don't listen to the Talmud. Hashem told you not to do it. I told you to do it. Right? It's a no-brainer. Okay, good. So the rule is 99 out of 100 times, ein shlech l'dvar avera. Now, you know, with every rule, there are exceptions. And over here, there's an exception. One of the exceptions, right? The Gemara in Kedushin, the second parak goes over all three exceptions. One of the exceptions is Mi'ilah. I can't tell you why, because I don't know why. But another, we have drashas, meaning that I could tell you. But when it comes to Mi'ilah, there is shliach l'dvar avera. If I give hektish money to somebody to tell him to spend it, so and he spends it, I get the avera. Good. It's an exception to the rule of ein shliach l'dvar avera. Okay, that's all the setup we need. Let's see all this inside. I'm Rav Yaakov Minar Pekod Mishmei de Ravina Tashma. I'm Rav Balabais L'shlucho Ten Li Chaticha. So, give me a piece of meat, l'orchin, for the guests. And what happened over here is that the meat under discussion, the meat belonged to Hekdesh. Okay, whatever. Let's just leave it like that. V'hu amar t'lushayim. And the shliach now tells the guest, hey, the Balabais told me that you should take two pieces of meat. Now, that's not what the Balabais told him. Balabais told him to take one piece of meat. Now, vehein nat lushlosh. Now, the guest got really comfortable, and they took three pieces of meat. Now, all this is to illustrate the following. So, kulamalu. And that is, each one of them violated the isser of me'ilah. Okay, instructions by the homeowner was to take one. So, even though he instructed, he didn't do it, again, by Me'ilah, there's shlichus. So, and by virtue of the fact that the shlich himself told him to take two, that second one, that was a him instruction. That was a shlich instruction. So he violated Me'ilah. And by virtue of the fact that the Balabais took a third piece, so the Balabais violated Me'ilah as well. Now, Iyamart bishlama mosif al divrav hu have mishumachi Balabais ma'al. Ela Iyamart mavir al dvarav have Balabais amai ma'al. So the Gemara over here seems to be bringing a great proof, because when the Balabais told him to take one, and the Shliach then told the guests, hey, take two. So in other words, if with the correct way to look at it is that it's one plus one, meaning my first piece of meat that I instruct you to take, well, I'm instructing, meaning that was told by the owner that instructed me to take, that you should take one. So that goes back to the Ba'abais. And then the second one is on me. Okay, fine. So that's, the Mishnah now makes perfect sense. However, when he said one and I said two, if that is a total deviation of what I was told to do, so then we know anytime the shliach deviates from instructions, so then he's no longer a shliach. That, by definition, breaks the agency. By virtue of the fact that the Mishnah and Me'ilah tells us that piece number one still goes back to the Baal Bayis, so that means to say that piece number one was following instructions, piece number two was an additional one. Oh. Bringing us back now to the seller of the property. I told the agent to sell a half an acre. He sold the full acre. Okay, so it seems like the correct way to look at it is the half an acre, the first half acre that he sold, good. The second half acre, obviously, different, meaning not instructed to do so. But in other words, we can break it up into two halves, just like we did in the Mishnah and Me'ilah. Good. And the Gemara deflects. The Gemara says, no, maybe not. It could be that the Mishnah Me'ilah is talking about where the Shliach specified, and he said, look, one piece you're taking because the Baal Bayis told me to tell you to take one piece. A second piece because I'm telling you to take a second piece. In other words, he clearly separates the instructions given to him by the Baal Bayis versus his own additional instructions, which, by the way, goes without saying. Obviously, he has no authorization to do, but still. In other words, that could be the case over there in Me'ilah. If, in fact, that's the case, what that does now is that it takes that case and then has no bearing on our case over here. Okay, and Adkan, we'll stop over here. And it's a great place to stop, even though the Gemara is going to continue its discussion tomorrow. Okay, let's quickly recap the daf today. So number one, we finished off yesterday's discussion regarding a widow and her ability to sell off property. Shelo be'beis din. Machlok is between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon, whether she can sell off her ksuva in or outside of Beis Din. But then the second discussion then what we started with is a Mishnah on Sadi Zainam Beis, where she sells off partial ksuva. And in the sale of partial ksuva, does she now forfeit her mizonos distributions? That's also machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shimon. Tanakhama says she does not. Rabbi Shimon says that she does. And then, in the course of that discussion, who do we paskin like? The Gemara says, clearly we paskin like the Tanakhama and not like Rabbi Shimon. Then what we covered is the fact that you can't serve as a dual agent. You can't be the agent of the seller and the agent of the buyer. And so therefore, when a woman is selling the properties of the estate, what she can't do, obviously by definition, she's representing the estate. She can't also represent herself as well. And so therefore, she can't sell the property to herself because then she has that dual representation, which the Gemara says you cannot do. Finally, our last discussion of the day is that what if she sells properties above or below its appraised value? So if she sold it below her appraised value, she has to suffer the loss. If she sold it above the appraised value, so that gain goes back to the kids. The Gemara says, why? Because that's how capitalism works. In other words, when you're providing the capital, and obviously if you made an agreement with him that you get to share profits, great, that's sharecropping, that you do. But in other words, without an agreement, so where do all profits go? All profits go back to the one providing the capital. Good. That's what Rebbe taught us. We saw clearly in our mission over here. And then our last discussion for today was what happens when I instruct an agent to sell half an acre and he sells a full acre. So do we at least validate the first half acre that sold? Yes or no? The Gemara debates, and we continue that debate into tomorrow's daf.